Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, April 12th. There are some people who don't have their microphone muted. Maybe that was just taken care of. Thank you. Before we start the agenda, will you please call the roll?
Representative Levy.
Excused.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Excused.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke is present by video, and I will check on Representative Levy.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Present by video. Okay, we have two items on our agenda today, two public hearings. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2379. This is a public hearing that was carried over from last week on April 8th. Mr. Alanak, I don't believe we need Legislative Revenue Office to introduce the bill for us. We had that information available, and April 8th's meeting record will show that. I'm going to be calling on those people who had already signed up on April 8th. For everyone who was participating in the meeting, in the public hearing that was scheduled for April 8th, I announced that with regret, we didn't have time to get to the last handful of people who had signed up already for testimony. So this is called a carryover. We've carried over that public hearing for everyone who has already signed up, and that's who we will be hearing from today. We have a witness list of several people remaining from last week. Here's the order that I'll be calling on you in. Nadine Block, Roger Beyer, Scott Bruin, Marianne Cooper, and Josie Kerner. Nadine Block, you're first. Oh, and by the way, I'm sorry for the interruption, but last week we were on a 2-minute time limit, so that's how we will continue today. With apologies for the interruption, Ms. Block.
No problem, thank you. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me an opportunity to present my opposition to two provisions in the proposed Dash 6 amendment. My name is Nadine Block. I live in Multnomah County, and I'm the Senior Vice President of Community and Government Relations for the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, SFI. SFI is an independent nonprofit that operates forest certification standards designed to promote healthy forests. We are also the home of Project Learning Tree, a K-12 environmental education program. The SFI Forest Management Standards includes requirements that conserve wildlife habitat, provide clean water, train logging professionals, and support conservation research. The collective impact of these practices is responsibly managed, healthy forests that contribute to climate change solutions and decrease wildfire risk. Our standards are backed by third-party independent audits to verify compliance to the standards. Across the U.S. and Canada, 375 million acres are certified to the SFI Forest Management Standards. That includes 3.8 million acres here in Oregon, or 80% of the certified forests in the state. Our standards are used by a wide variety of forest managers and owners, including state agencies, tribes, conservation organizations, universities, and private corporations. I am concerned about a provision in proposed Amendment Dash 6 that would create a tax incentive only for forest owners whose lands are certified to the Forest Stewardship Council and would exclude forest owners whose lands are certified to our standard, SFI. Creating policy incentives for landowners who voluntarily choose to get certified is a positive action, but limiting the incentive to just one standard is detrimental. Excluding SFI means the state is selectively rewarding some landowners and turning its back on other landowners who are voluntarily adopting practices that go beyond state regulations to create healthy, resilient forests. I encourage you to reconsider this language. If you're going to include a tax incentive for landowners whose forests are certified, I urge you to also include SFI in this provision. I also want to go on the record opposing the elimination of funding for OFRI. OFRI has been a critical partner to Project Learning Tree, our environmental education program, allowing teachers to attend workshops and receive curriculum free of charge. I provided additional information in my written remarks. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Roger Beyer.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, my name is Roger Beyer and I'm here representing OSWA in opposition to House Bill 2379. I would like to start by saying that OSWA agrees with and supports the testimony given by Chris Edwards and Tyler Ernest of OFIC. Under this bill, the current volume-based tax is eliminated and replaced by a severance tax based on value. OSWA opposes a value-based tax because it treats landowners differently depending on the price received for logs and the cost to produce them. If one assumes current value for logs in Northwest Oregon is $750 per 1,000 board feet, then 3% tax equals $22.50 per 1,000 board feet if it was based on volume. This means a 3% rate would be a tax increase of 545% over the current rate. At $400 per 1,000, the tax increase would be 290%, and at $900 per 1,000, it is 653%. All are enormous increases. While we appreciate this bill retains the 25,000 board foot exemption, I need to point out that very few landowners harvest in a manner that would stay below this amount annually. Most landowners time their harvest to peaks in log markets and then don't harvest again for a designated period of time. A harvest must have enough volume that they can hire a logger and at an affordable price. They work on a sustained yield basis, but they do not harvest annually. Finally, I want to speak to the removal of the general fund for Eastern Oregon landowners contained in the Dash 6 amendments. The 2013 Wildfire Protection Act established this program because the legislature recognized that the annual fire protection budgets for landowners in Eastern Oregon had grown to the point of being unaffordable. This problem had become worse as log markets in the region had disappeared at the same time the fire budgets were increasing. To stop landowners from converting timber tracts to other uses, the legislature offered the $1 million annually to help combat rate increases. As log markets had not yet rebounded in Eastern Oregon in the last 8 years, eliminating this now would reverse that trend. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Next is Scott Bruin, and after Scott Bruin is Mary Ann Cooper.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Bruin. I am the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a business trade association in Oregon with about 1,600 members that employ almost 300,000 Oregonians. Madam Chair, committee, we are opposed to House Bill 2379, and we fully agree with the voices of Oregon's timber and forest product communities that spoke last week in opposition to this bill. It is our opinion that this bill is bad for these timber communities and therefore bad for Oregon. For our part today, we would like to put on record that any new timber tax should not be considered in a vacuum or on a standalone basis. That's because Oregon's timber and forest product industries, like every business in Oregon, are already facing a 41% increase in taxes by 2022 when taxes increases passed by the last legislature in 2019 are fully implemented. These increases move Oregon from 40th in the nation in effective business tax rate to 19th in the nation. This makes it more difficult for every business, including timber and forest product businesses, to invest, to hire, and to compete. A new timber tax on top of these other tax increases, can do nothing but have a devastating negative impact on Oregon's quintessential forest product industries. And that's why we urge this committee to take a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us again today. Marianne Cooper.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marianne Cooper, and I am here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau. We represent farmers and ranchers, including small woodland owners across the state who would be impacted by 2379. We are here today in opposition to House Bill 2379 and the Dash 6 Amendment for a number of reasons. First, the Dash 6 Amendment would defund OFRI and move those resources to other programs which are more appropriately a general fund obligation. This would set a significant and dangerous precedent for all of Oregon's commodity commissions.
Sorry,
was that to me?
I don't know who that was. Sorry, Ms. Cooper, just continue.
Thank you, I'm sorry. This would set a significant and dangerous precedent for all of Oregon's commodity commissions. Oregon has 22 commodity commissions that operate with oversight from the Oregon Department of Agriculture, ranging from wheat to salmon to berries to cherries to hops to albacore tuna. These commodity commissions serve an important role for their industries engaged in marketing promotion, investing in research and educational programs. Critically, all Oregon commodity commissions, including the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, are funded by the industries they serve. There are no general fund dollars that go to support commodity commissions. Additionally, I want to say that Dash 6 amendments propose a different rate for different categories of land ownership based on how many acres someone is managing. That sets a very dangerous precedent across both forestry and ag. And we oppose the idea that landowners should pay a differential rate based on size of production. We are also concerned that the Dash 6 Amendment proposes to reduce the tax burden by 1% for land owners whose land management is certified by a third-party stewardship council.
I'm sorry, I think I heard the bell, and I gave you a little bit extra time because there was that unfortunate interruption. Do you have your testimony in writing?
I do, and I will get it into the record. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're happy to receive it that way.
Thank you.
And the final speaker will be Josie Kerner. Josie? Committee will wait a minute to make sure.
Sorry about that. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Sorry. For the record, my name is Josie Kerner, and I am here today on behalf of the Leetwin voters of Oregon to support 2379, because it will rectify an imbalance in taxation that has resulted in inadequate timber revenues for Oregon since the 90s. We believe revenue should be returned to the counties and should support a variety of critical wildfire management programs and other needs. We support a tax based on timber value rather than the current outmoded one based on volume, which now brings in only $16 million per year to support the industry and does nothing for ordinary Oregonians. The timber industry has had preferential tax treatment for far too long. Looking at the revenues from over time, from all timber resources in LRO's 2019 Basic Facts Oregon, you see that tax revenues have shrunk. The business excise tax revenue is almost non-existent, while harvest revenues have remained relatively constant at 3.5 to 4 billion board feet per year over the same period of time. Our current tax harvest is $4.13 per 1,000 board feet on Western lumber, worth an average between $650 and $750, and much more now. But the 0.6% is a very low tax to pay. According to LRO's projection done for this bill, Washington State has 5% on value, collects more than twice as much as Oregon does, whether calculated on pond or stumpage values compared to our fat volume rate. So changing over to a value system alone would bring in significantly more revenue to Oregon. We think that small forest owners should not be taxed any more than they pay now with the harvest tax, but large commercial and corporate owners with significant acreage, over 2,500, who are experiencing good profits are the ones who should pay the tax at 5% or even more. These timber owners pay We support a value-based tax, but the details as to how many acres of ownership are to be required subject to the tax and what forest practices should be incentivized are details that we think need to be carefully reviewed by a range of stakeholders, including timber owners, large and small. We support a task force dedicated to working out a fair and reasonable tax. Now is the right time to address timber legislation. We urge you to support 239, but with an eye to making amendments to be sure these other issues are considered well as well.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes our list of everyone who had signed up to testify last week for the April 8th public hearing. Anyone who's listening to this and would still like to submit written testimony, whether you were able to speak or not, you have some additional ideas or thoughts you'd like to share with us. We are still receiving public written testimony for the written record. Please send it to us. We can receive it until tomorrow at 3:15 in the afternoon. Another 24 hours for receiving testimony, written testimony for the record. Committee, do you have any questions for any of the people who have been with us today in this public hearing? I'm not seeing any. I'm closing the public hearing. Yes.
Before you do that, I see a comment in the comment box. I don't know if you want to read that first before you close the hearing or not. So
I will look at the comments. I had announced, I will explain to the committee, as I explained last week, we had a number of people who had signed up for the public hearing on April 8th. We didn't get to everybody on that list. We have now concluded getting through everybody on that list. Because I announced last week that we were carrying over the hearing to hear from those people who had already signed up, anyone listening to the hearing would have heard me announce that. And if there are other people who wanted to testify but hadn't signed up, they were then discouraged from signing up today. Today's posting was only for the purpose of covering those people who had already signed up. And I'm concerned that if I added any name to the list today who wasn't on the previous week's list, I would also be omitting anyone who may have wanted to sign up but realized they couldn't because of the nature of the carryover. So, Rep. Reschke, does that, it may sound a little bit over-processed, but
Madam Chair, I think that's fair, and I just wanted to make sure that that was clear, and you've made it clear, so
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure what happened, but I have checked my versions of the printed list from last week, and I've asked staff to check. Staff has checked, I think, more than once to check the names of everyone who signed up last week, and we have now been through all the names who were signed up last week.
And people are still able to put in a written testimony until for 24 hours, is that correct?
That
not correct? Okay.
That is correct, another 24 hours. And one other thing I'd like to mention, there was one person who signed up for last week, did not show up to testify. The name was Dan Connolly, and staff had reached out to hear from Mr. Connolly and didn't hear anything back. It's just someone who, this occasionally happens in other committees as well. Someone signs up and then doesn't appear to testify. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to express appreciation to all the people who testified today and on the 8th. Particularly, one of the takeaways I got was the need to protect smaller forest owners who own under 2,500 acres, but while at the same time just recognizing that a lot of these small counties need to have their funding to support their services, forest fire preparedness, and also just protect drinking water sources. So, and that has a direct impact from the logging from timber. So I just wanted to express appreciation to all the people who've testified today. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Pham. Anyone else with questions or comments before I head for closing this public hearing? Make sure that it's on the record for this public hearing. Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2379. I'm now opening a public hearing on House Bill 3364, LRO.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, House Bill 3364 is a bill that would create a new income tax credit that is available to taxpayer that is a seller of publicly supported housing in Oregon and makes a qualifying sale. A qualifying sale is means any sale of publicly supported housing to a purchaser that enters into a recorded affordability restriction agreement governing the use of the housing going forward. The amount of the credit is currently unspecified. It's a blank in the bill. So the amount of the credit is equal to blank percent of the gain realized on the taxpayer's federal income tax return for the qualifying sale. The unused credit amounts are allowed to be carried forward up to 3 years, and there is a requirement that the tax credit would be certified by the Housing and Community Service Department. The credit is limited to no more than $3 million in certifications per calendar year, and it would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2022, and before January 1st, 2028.
Thank you. We're going to start the witness list with Representative Pham. Oh, Rep. Reschke, you have a question.
I do, and thank you very much. I know Representative Pham is a chief sponsor, and also Representative Zika is a co-chief sponsor. And he didn't sign up, but I think he's in the room as well and wants to give a real quick testimony, but that's up to you. But he is a co-chief sponsor that wanted to say a few words.
Committee, we're going to stand at ease for just a moment.
Resumed.
Thank you, everyone. While we took a brief pause to figure out how to accommodate our witnesses, we have a couple of legislators who are going to testify, Representative Zika and Representative Pham. Whichever one of you is prepared to go first is fine with me.
Chair Nathanson, I would defer to Representative Zika to testify first.
Great. Representative Zika.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair. And I apologize for the mix up there. And appreciate you allowing me to testify. And I promise I will keep it brief. Chair and committee for allowing me to testify on House Bill 3364. My name is Jack Zika, State Representative out of House District 53. House Bill 3364 would allow a seller of publicly supported housing to receive a tax credit upon sale. And this mainly is for incentivizing the seller or, future buyer to keep those properties affordable. So they have to go into a contract for stating that they will keep them affordable. And we all know in our districts, we need the affordable housing. We're all trying to find ways to accomplish that and get more affordable housing. And this is a way to try to retain these affordable housing units and make sure that they stay affordable in the future. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for being with us, Representative Zika. Now, Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Khan Pham. I'm the State Representative for House District 46. And as the chief sponsor for House Bill 3364 with Rep. Zika, I am honored to share my strong support for this important bill that will help address housing affordability. As we all know, Oregon is in an affordability housing crisis, and we have to make sure that we keep every affordable home that we have. The well-being of every Oregonian starts at home, and as members of the Revenue Committee, we see every day that tax policy can be a powerful tool to create incentives for the outcomes that we need for Oregon families. So one of the important ways that we can use tax policy during this session are bills like House Bill 3364, which will create targeted incentives to help us maintain affordable housing in communities across the state. Today, we're at risk of losing a substantial number of rental homes that are affordable to Oregonians with low incomes. And as publicly supported affordable housing communities reach the end of their affordability periods, they often convert to market rate apartments, then putting tenants at risk of losing their longtime homes. So residents of publicly supported affordable housing communities, including seniors, people with disabilities, and families with children, have very few options in Oregon's private rental housing market right now. And we need additional tools and resources to help ensure that we don't lose our affordable homes. So House Bill 3364 would help keep existing publicly supported housing affordable by establishing a capital gains tax credit on the sale of multifamily affordable housing to a preservation-focused housing provider. House Bill 3364 would create a simple and effective tool to keep these homes affordable by encouraging, through a tax incentive, owners of publicly supported housing to sell their property to a housing provider who is focused on preservation. A similar tax exemption has helped owners of manufactured home parks to sell to a new owner who promises to maintain affordability for residents. We can replicate that success with this capital gains tax credit, which would provide a measurable competitive edge to preservation-focused housing providers. In order for a seller to take advantage of this tax credit, House Bill 3364 requires the purchaser to agree to a 30-year restricted use period and caps rents at 80% of area median income. To manage the costs, House Bill 3364 caps the annual tax credit amount at $3 million. House Bill 3364 is a simple, innovative solution to use all the tools available to ensure that we maintain affordable housing for Oregon families. Many of our communities have experienced economic uncertainty, and by taking action to keep affordable housing available, we can ensure Oregon families will have options that they can afford to build a strong foundation for their families. For these reasons, I urge your support for House Bill 3364. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Pham. We're ready to go to the remaining list of witnesses. We always appreciate it when people can keep their testimony to about 3 minutes. You will hear the timer go off at 3 minutes. And if possible, it would be great if you could wrap up then or at the end of that sentence. The first speaker will be Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, followed by Rob Prash.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Zreschke, and Vice Chair Pham. I am Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, the former state representative for House District 46 and the very proud constituent of Representative Pham. I'm also the former chair of the Human Services and Housing Committee in the House. And under that capacity, I worked very hard on affordable housing, as many of you know, and we went from about 155,000 units short of affordable housing in general to about 140,000 because we've been making great progress over the last few years. But we want to make sure we don't go backwards and lose the housing that we currently have. And so we call that preservation of affordable housing. So when a contract comes up, the private market can then buy that housing and no longer keep it affordable. So we have been putting lottery bonds toward preserving affordable housing, but we have so many more units that we need to preserve than we have lottery bonding for, and this is another great tool. And I just want to mention that this brings together a couple of efforts I've worked on in the past. One is preservation of affordable housing, but the other is using as a tool this capital gains tax credit for groups that are developers or owners of properties that want to buy up housing and maintain them as affordable. We, in 2017, there was a bipartisan effort by Representative Julie Parrish and Jeff Reardon that went through my committee. It was House Bill 2879 that used capital gains tax credit. And then in 2019, I was honored to co-chief sponsor with Representative Zika and several of you with very strong bipartisan support, another bill, 2811, that would have extended a capital gains tax to owners who buy properties, who sell properties to nonprofits or to cities and are willing to keep them affordable. Neither of those bills passed. This is another opportunity to really make sure we use this tool, and it's bringing together the preservation of affordable housing and the capital gains tax credit for the first time. So I urge your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kenny Geyer. It's fun to see you again. Next is Rob Prash, followed by Doug Christman.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is Rob Prash. I'm the Preservation Director with the Network for Oregon Affordable Housing. NOAA is a nonprofit community development financial institution created by the Oregon Bankers Association in 1990. We finance affordable multifamily rental properties across the state and work closely with housing advocates and our borrowers to create and preserve affordable rental housing. We also manage the Oregon Housing Preservation Project, which together with partners has preserved nearly 15,000 units of publicly supported housing. I'm here to urge you to support HB 3364, which would create an incentive to encourage preservation of publicly supported housing. HB 3364 complements Oregon's existing preservation statute, which provides an opportunity to purchase and preserve at-risk affordable housing projects, but does not include financial resources to do so. Over the last five decades, billions have been invested in the development of privately owned, publicly supported housing here in Oregon and across the country. As rent-restricted properties come to the end of their contract period, though, owners may elect to convert them to market rate rentals or other uses. During the next 10 years, project maturities and subsidy contract expirations will be happening with increasing frequency. According to Oregon Housing, by 2029, over 6,500 affordable rental homes across the state will mature, and many of those will convert to market rate housing. Oregon has prioritized preservation of at-risk publicly supported housing, but we can do more by expanding our toolbox of policies that encourage preservation. As you've heard, HB 3364 would establish a modest but effective preservation tool, a capital gains tax credit that would incentivize owners of publicly supported housing to sell their property to a buyer willing to preserve it. You've already heard how it's modeled after the manufactured home park tax exemption, so I'll skip through that. But rather than an exemption, HB 3364 would create a tax credit used to offset the seller's capital gains when they sell their property to a preservation-focused purchaser. And as you heard, to control costs, the bill includes a $3 million annual cap on the amount of the credit, which would only be claimed if the purchaser agrees to execute a 30-year project use agreement. We're confident that the tax incentive offered by HB 3364 will encourage many owners to consider selling their property to a preservation-focused buyer rather than convert it to market-rate housing. So I urge you to support House Bill 3364. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. Doug Christman, followed by Lauren Meldoza.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, and Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is Doug Christman, and I am a preservation-focused developer out of Enterprise, Oregon. Our company has preserved over 50 properties with project-based rental assistance, totaling a little over 2,000 units, and I feel strongly about HB 3364 is another tool that we could use to preserve more properties. And I want to assure, I don't think this is a windfall for the sellers because of the unique aspects of some of the properties we're preserving. were all developed in the 80s, where they were throwing out money left and right for affordable housing developments, along with the rental assistance. The owners entered into 50-year loan amortizations that were amortized at rates that were market rates in the 80s as high as 13.5% interest. And so these properties have been amortizing. So now they're 30 to 35 years old. They've paid almost zero principal down on these loans, but they still, and so they are now fully depreciated. And so when they sell these properties, the money they get on the transaction is fully taxed based on the sales price, but their proceeds are reduced by the debt that's still on the properties. So in more cases than not, these sellers have to go to the closing table and write a check because the tax liability is higher than their sales proceeds, which is sad. And so then they have to decide whether or not they want to write the check, or do they want to wait for the step up in basis, which is not a lot of fun to talk about that, but it is a planning tool. So I think this is a good tool, and I really support House Bill 3364. I just want it to be put on the record that it's not a giveaway to rich property owners. There's so many of these properties that were developed by rural developers back in the 80s that are mom and pops that really have not made anything on these investments. So I appreciate your appreciate you let me give the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And can you stay with us for a minute? Will you please turn off your mic? There's an echo. Could you please? Thank you. Can you stay with us for a couple of minutes, Mr. Christman? I'm hoping that is an affirmative. Laura Naldoza is next.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, Vice Chair Pham, members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify on behalf in support of HB 3364 today. My name is Laura Naldoza. I am the Legislative and Communications Manager with Neighborhood Partnerships, and I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance. As many of you know, the Oregon Housing Alliance is a coalition of 90 organizations from all parts of the state. Our members have come together with the knowledge that housing opportunity is the foundation on which all of our success is built. We represent a diverse set of voices, including affordable housing developers, residents of affordable housing, local jurisdictions, and organizations working to meet basic needs in every corner of our state. Today, we simply don't have enough affordable homes for people who need them in communities across Oregon. People, our neighbors and members of the community, are struggling with homelessness, housing instability, rent burdens, and to make ends meet and put food on the table. For countless families and individuals, particularly those from Black, Indigenous, or other communities of color, access to a safe, stable, and affordable home is further out of reach than it has ever been. As you know, privately held affordable housing is required under an affordable housing covenant to remain affordable for a number of years, often 30 to 60 years. After a period of compliance has ended, its owner may, under current law, be able to opt out of an affordability provision and continue raising rents toward market rate, putting into jeopardy the currently available supply of affordable housing and the financial well-being of residents of affordable housing who could potentially be priced out of their communities. HB 3364 aims to offer an additional solution that would help to preserve existing affordable homes in the state of Oregon. An owner of affordable housing would be able to sell their property to a buyer that would maintain its affordability by renewing restrictive covenants on the property for an additional 30 years, and the seller would in turn receive a credit on their capital gains tax obligations as an incentive for selling their property to a purchaser who would maintain those affordability restrictions. HB 3364, we believe, is an opportunity to help create a win-win scenario between owners of privately held affordable housing reaching the end of their restricted use period and current residents of affordable housing. The Oregon Housing Alliance urges your support of HB 3364 and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, do you have any questions for those people who've testified today? Mr. Christman, I'd like to ask you a question. We hear a lot from people interested in policies, and a lot of it is at the policy and theoretical level, if you will, but you're out there actually doing this. Could you help paint the picture for me of the types of properties that you work with?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
We mostly work on small properties in rural areas that have project-based rental assistance, which allows us to house people at the lowest level of income because they have rental assistance, which is based on how much income they make. And this is a federal subsidy, which if these properties go out of the program, we lose that federal subsidy. And it's, in my opinion, really expensive to replace. You don't want to do that. It's a great resource to keep in the state.
And
go ahead.
Could you turn off the audio while I ask the question? Thank you. I'm hearing an echo every time. Thank you. I'd like to follow up. I'd like to understand exactly what type of properties we're talking about. When people talk about affordable housing, some people are picturing if they live in an area where it's primarily, let's say, two-story apartment buildings, or someone else living in a much bigger city may be used to really big, you know, like a block or two of dozens of rental units. Somewhere else, it may be some duplexes in a residential neighborhood. So help us understand, I believe you said enterprise. You're over there in the enterprise area. What types of housing are being preserved as affordable?
Well, my first affordable housing project that I was involved in was in my hometown of Wallowa, and it was an 8-unit Section 8 complex for the elderly. And I was a site manager, the owner, the maintenance guy. I did everything on this project, and it's still in the program. It was preserved several years ago with a small home grant, and we've only signed up for another 60 years worth of affordability, and I think we're in it 10, so another 50 years left. But it's projects like that, you know, that might be a little bit bigger. There was a larger project in Enterprise, a smaller project in Elgin, several projects in Ontario, you know, all just going up 84, LeGrand, Pendleton, the Dalles, to all the rural areas that were rural back in the 80s in Portland, you know, Estacada, Sherwood, Dundee, Sandy, and then to the coast and all the way down I-5. But the largest property we have, I think, that we've preserved is 125-unit senior complex in Grants Pass. But it's over acres and acres. It doesn't seem it's not high dense development.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. That gives me a real good idea of the range of types of properties that we're seeing benefit from this policy. I appreciate your additional information there. Committee, any other questions or any comments on this bill before I close the public hearing? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I am very supportive of this concept, and I want to just put on the record some lessons that we've learned, I think, out of the manufactured housing program, and Rob Presh is much more able to talk to this than I am. But just a couple notes. One is it doesn't work for out-of-state buyers who don't have an Oregon tax liability. So that's one problem that we've run into, because an increasing number of large corporations, at least in the manufactured home world, are the ones who own these parks. Number two, if we do this, we need to have money available right now. So to close that purchase, the entity that proposes to make that make the purchase needs to be able to draw upon state or other public funding with very little delay, so that we can actually compete in a very active private market. And third is just the accelerating costs of prices associated with housing. It's going to be increasingly difficult for us to compete. So having things like a capital gains tax break available is a great tool, and it's still going to be hard. And that brings me sort of to my last point, which is what we've learned, I think, in the manufactured home world, is that we really have to have relationships with the sellers as they start to contemplate selling, so that we know it's coming, we can get the cash around, and we need to seek out buyers who are who basically want to see these properties stay in affordable hands, or in the case of manufactured home parks, go to residents or nonprofits. Having sympathy, so the work up front to identify owners, work with them, figure out what their time frame is going to be, and then be ready to respond when the property goes on the market is really an essential part of this. And I'm not sure how we we should be thinking about how we do that upfront work as we put these tax breaks in place.
That's a good point, and that's a question that goes even beyond our committee's work. Thank you, Representative Marsh. Any other questions? Yes, Rep. Levy. And by the way, I want to welcome Representatives Levy and Smith, who did join our meeting quite a while ago. Rep. Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Hi, Doug. Nice to see you. You're from my district. I represent you, good old Wallowa County. I've actually seen some of your affordable housing, and I'm really impressed. So I just want to tell you to keep up the good work. I like this bill, and I look forward to working and seeing it go forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rep. Levy. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Okay. I'm not seeing any. I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 3364. There's nothing else on our published agenda. Mr. Alanak, any questions, observations, comments, information items for us before we adjourn for the day?
I don't think so, Madam Chair. I don't have anything for you today.
Okay. Committee, anything else before we adjourn? I'll see you all at our next meeting. We're adjourned.